Okay, welcome to the Bitcoin Gauntlet, episode 4 with Stack and Beats. How you doing, Stack and Beats?
I'm doing great, man. How about you?
Pretty good. So for the listeners who may not know you, if you could give us a quick TLDR on what you're up to in Bitcoin, who you are, all that stuff.
Yeah, so I'm just a regular ostrich with a bit of a psychedelic past. I found Bitcoin like 4 years ago. Then I unlocked a series of other interests like existentialism and metaphysics. I'm also a translator for Consensus Network. So I've translated like three books now, one by Save, one by Aaron, the Genesis book. And next month or so, it's Lynn Alden's Broken Money. I'm also a dad of a 7-year-old girl. So she's also a future Bitcoiner, of course.
Excellent. Yeah, next generation of Bitcoiners should be interesting.
Very
All
much so.
right, so I believe you have a good idea of how the gauntlet works. For the new listeners, Stack and Beats will be presented with three categories of Bitcoin-related topics. He'll pick one, and then from there, he'll pick three prompts, and then he will either argue in the affirmative or the negative for those prompts. We'll do that four times. Hopefully, I will be able to steel man the other side. And then there'll be a bonus question at the end, and we'll give Stack and Beats a score. All right, so are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, round one is Austrian economics, mining, or miscellaneous.
Let's go with Austrian economics.
All right, I think that's my favorite here. All right, Austrian economics one. Bitcoin speculative attack is immoral, i.e., the cancel on effect with extra steps. Number two, utility value is deflationary, which actually increases stock to flow. Or three, Bitcoin is not, quote, backed by anything.
I'm definitely gonna go with the third one because the other two I don't think I have a clue about, to be honest. So it's gonna be the third one.
Okay.
So Bitcoin is not backed by anything is the statement. Well, there's a few ways to look at it. The first is like Bitcoin doesn't have to be backed by anything in the traditional sense. Because the way I view it, it's the thing that's going to back everything else. And by contrast, the only thing that fiat currency like the dollar is backed by is authority. When you look at monetary history and why different types of money came to an end, we know what properties are desirable and which aren't. So you could say Bitcoin is backed by all the desirable properties, except maybe one which is a long history of success. Then, of course, since it's an Austrian economics question, if we put Bitcoin's objective properties aside, any human backing is based on the subjectivity of how humans value things. Considering Bitcoin's price increase in the last 16 years, I think it's safe to say that we're on the right track of heading to a proper valuation. Bitcoin is also backed by a shitload of low time preference psychos.
Yes.
Something I saw recently, the hash rates reached well, how much was it? A zeta hash, I think, which is like a trillion giga hash. So that's definitely, if you say Bitcoin is not backed by anything, if you look at this metric alone already, I yeah.
Okay. So what would you say about, and I'll have a follow-up question. We'll see how this goes. What would you say about Bitcoin being backed by energy?
Yeah, it's that's sort of the same as me saying it's backed by a zeta hash of hash rate, because it takes a lot of electricity to accomplish this. Not sure if I get the question.
Yeah, so this is one I've been itching a little bit to talk about. It's in the mining section. So what would you say if in the very long term, let's say at least decades, but maybe even longer, maybe in a century or so, if total hash rate started to go down, and not just like a little bit down, what if it went down significantly? What would you think that means for Bitcoin and this element of the backing? So you could say maybe the energy is part of the backing, and certainly all those other things you mentioned, Bitcoin's properties and its subjective value, its superiority as a monetary technology. But yeah, what if the hash rate went down, which implies that
So
the energy usage went down?
significantly, you mean?
Yes, maybe even lower than today in a century.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to first dance around the question a little by saying I think it's highly unlikely that it will happen, simply because people will always try to serve their own best interests. So, I mean, if there's something you can do to make a great living out of, and you're not going to do it, they're always going to choose the easiest path. And I think for people with capital, once they see it, there's no turning back, I think. Now to your question itself, then, because you asked me why would that happen, right? Why would the hash rate go down? Or is that not, that was the question, right?
I guess, yeah, well, why partially, but or you could also look at it if we assume that hash rate will go way down in the far future, what does that mean for Bitcoin, and what does that mean as far as the credibility of its, backing from an energy standpoint?
I think so it's also not because of the obvious answer would be like on the why, it would be like government's crackdowns, but that's not a question then. Okay, I think I get it. Yeah, that is a good question. I don't think I have a proper answer for that either. But it's all I can say is it would make it more susceptible to 51% attacks, and definitely more likely to happen. Then again, I think people would also combat it with adding extra hash rate wherever they could.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
I think that last part is the key that, and I wanted to bring awareness to this because I listened to a great podcast with Pierre Richard on the Bitcoin Standard podcast. I think it's Bitcoin Standard podcast episode 200, kind of in the middle, where Pierre Richard brings this up that he thinks hash rate will go way down in the far, far future. And he did an experiment, a reductio ad absurdum. If you just had one computer, one like laptop or whatever, one person mining Bitcoin, would you consider that decentralized? And Pierre says yes, because if that person starts to, say, censor transactions, then that essentially makes a bounty and makes it more profitable for someone else to start mining. And the real key is Bitcoin's mining permissionlessness. So anyone can mine. You don't need to ask permission to start mining. And so, in a sense, the less energy we use, the better, because we could maybe use those energy for other things. And before we people start screaming at me that I'm a climate hysteric or something, I do think it's funny if we start if we use more energy to make them more hysteric, but maybe we could use that energy for other things. And that the real key is how much available energy is there to mine, that's ready to mine in the event that there is censorship or a 51% attack. So it's like having, and this is from Pierre, like having a really big guard dog in your backyard. Just the presence of the guard dog is enough to prevent the attacker in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. And the incentives, like say there is only one person indeed mining, like the incentive for other people to join. So we're talking, I'm not sure if we're talking post block subsidy or still that you still get block subsidy, but in the case that I'm thinking is that there is a very high incentive that other people start mining because the difficulty will be so low that the reward is just impossible to pass on.
Right. So okay. Maybe that anything else to say on that one, or do you want to move forward?
Yeah, so we're still on the backing thing, right? So, or not.
I parlayed into a little bit of mining, but
Yeah, because I still thought of something with the backing.
go ahead.
People could just as easily be buying Bitcoin instead of mining, because that's the safer bet, you know? But the fact that many people are in fact purchasing the mining equipment and the infrastructure that shows a long-term investment, meaning there is a high belief from the and conviction from their part. So that's another sort of backing which is related to the mining.
Maybe a holistic answer would be that it's, quote unquote, backed by all these number of things: the mining infrastructure, the energy, the nodes, the companies, the wallets, the developers, the users, all that stuff, the incentives, all that stuff. So,
Yeah.
all right, let's move on to round two. This is the difficulty adjustment question. Because here are the three most commonly selected categories so far. Round two, we have adoption, Bitcoin culture, or Nostr.
That sucks because I love all three, to be honest.
Yeah, they were very popular in the first three episodes, so.
Yeah. Oh, God. Let's go with Noster.
All right. Nostr. Number one, Nostr helps Bitcoin more than Bitcoin helps Nostr. Number two, the biggest risk to Nostr is that it will fall into the centralization trend, same centralization trend as email and today's social media sites. Or three, Nostr keys need easier backups, authentication, rotation, etc., before Nostr can go mainstream.
Let's go with number three again. So, about the keys.
Okay.
Yeah, as the previous time, I think I'm gonna swirl around the question a bit again and say I don't think it ever will go mainstream, even Noster. Those centralized fuckers know well enough that if they censor too much, they will lose their product, which is the people, you know. And most people seem to be fine with a moderate amount of censorship or even high amounts because they don't see that amount themselves. Yeah, there's many Bitcoiners I know, and they're just fine with Twitter banning their accounts 4 times and just making a new account every time.
American HODL.
And I am not sure about that. I thought he wasn't on Twitter anymore. Okay, too bad
Oh,
for him.
true. Or Labra HODL, maybe we'll go with.
Okay. So to answer the actual question on on a Bitcoin standard, it wouldn't even be necessary to make key backup easier because people would already understand the concept of keeping their keys safe and how to use them. And that could work the other way around as well. If people would understand how important it is to safely store their Nostr keys somewhere, it wouldn't be a problem for them to understand that the key to their money also has to be stored at least as safe. On a fiat standard, which we're currently in, of course, it would have to become easier to get Nostr to become mainstream. But as I said, I just don't see it happening because people don't value censorship resistance as much as they do ease of use and flashy UX, I guess.
So, what do you think are the main driving forces of Nostr adoption? It seems like you're saying that it's censorship. So, in the case of say Bitcoin, I mean, couldn't you apply that to Bitcoin as well? That if like the more that governments censor or payment platforms, banks censor transactions, the more Bitcoin adoption there would be. And
Yeah, exactly.
if there weren't as much censorship, then there wouldn't be as much Bitcoin adoption. Or are there other features and use cases of Nostr that may increase adoption other than censorship?
Wait, let me see if I can say the word right. Interoperability. It's a difficult when you're not an English person. Yeah, I'm not very technical on the Nostr side, so but I've seen so many things like there's so many different Nostr apps out there, all with a different use case, and yeah, that you can just rotate between all of them with a single pair of keys is it has a giant use case, but we're just not there yet, I think, because it's still very. It still works very goofily, I guess I could say.
Yeah, we're still super early. Last time I checked on Nostr stats, maybe we have, and I know these are legacy metrics, which are fiat kind of metrics, but daily active users, something like 18,000, weekly active users, something like 45,000. So still super early, but
Is this a daily active or
yeah, daily active is something like 18,000. Weekly is 40, 45.
Yeah, because that's another thing. It's a very bad metric to see how popular or how valuable something is if we look at daily use, because daily use is almost like an addiction, you know? So it's not the best metric to look at in terms of success, or I guess.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, if other application or other legacy sites start integrating Noster, maybe we could look at Sats flows, something with real energy behind it. But going back to what you mentioned before, yeah, I'm very bullish on the interoperability side. I find it very frustrating that, like, why can't I see Twitter content on Facebook? Not that I use any of these products, but why can't I use Twitter, see Twitter on Facebook and on LinkedIn? And I need to have a login for every single different walled garden. Super frustrating. Or even I need to be logged in. God forbid you want to look at anything on Reddit. I don't know why you would, but they are just making it very difficult to see content if you're not logged in. And I think that ultimately drives people away. I mean, it's a kind of, maybe it's kind of censorship. And that makes me want to use Mo Nostr all the more and use Twitter and Reddit less. So I think at some point these legacy platforms will have to integrate Nostr and revamp their business models because openness, I think, ultimately wins.
Yeah, for a particular reason, I wanted to check something on Twitter recently, and I was fucking unaware that you even had to make a log, be or have an account to just look at that stuff. I was just half shocked that this is the way these things operates today.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. They're going in the other direction, but that will just drive more people to Noster. So
I hope so. But to be honest, I'm fine the way it is right now. It's kind of cozy, you know? It's
yeah, we have a bunch of real freaks, a real a loyal group of people,
Yeah.
mostly Bitcoiners. So it's a fun time. So, all right, let's go on to round three. We have protocol upgrades, political philosophy, and network slash consensus.
Can we add one of the options of round two to this?
No, we've experienced an upwards difficulty adjustment, so
Ooh,
you will have to exert more energy to find your block.
that. Oh, let me think about this for a second. Definitely not political philosophy. Although, could you give a small, small hint as to an example or something that would be
In which category?
in political philosophy.
Let's see. Different types of government structures, maybe how and how they relate to Bitcoin or how they may be applied to Bitcoin structure, and maybe how governments may change with Bitcoin adoption.
I see. Okay, yeah, no, I'm definitely not picking that one. Let's go with. Protocol upgrades.
Okay. Political philosophy, I think I made a lot for Eric Kaysen, so he might be the ideal
Oh,
person for
you
that.
definitely need to have him on.
Yeah, Eric, if you're listening, I'd love to have you on. I've been a huge fan for a very long time.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
Okay. We went with protocol upgrades, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Number one is, some of these are long, so bear with me. Number one, UTXO ownership potential needs to expand dramatically for Bitcoin to stay decentralized and secure. Number two, a hard fork with a one-time block size increase that can be included in a hard fork for an existential bug, for example, the 2106 timestamp bug, will succeed. Or number three, Bitcoin needs a hard fork with privacy upgrades at the protocol level.
Once again, it's gonna be number three.
Okay.
Just because yeah, when I only hear the first four words, Bitcoin needs a hard fork, and then the first five words, I'm already like, hell no. So that's a big ne negative on that.
Right. Well, for example, I mean, in number two, it appears that Bitcoin will need a hard fork for that 2106 timestamp bug. So, just saying. But number three is more subjective, to be sure.
Yes and no.
Right.
I
I see what
mean,
you're saying.
yeah. I mean, it's a bit tricky. As we saw with SegWit and Taproot, those aren't hard forks, those are soft forks. The thing is, that already came with unforeseen consequences. Like, what was it? It allowed some kind of I forgot what it was, but was it the NFTs that got allowed thanks to that? Or?
Yeah, with the the witness discount, I believe allowed, or not allowed, but made ordinals orders of magnitude cheaper.
Yeah, which it can be used as an attack on the network. So my point being, if this, and this was well thought out of, this stuff. So if that already can come with unforeseen consequences, I'm very much opposed to a hard fork. Like I'm not the one to say let's ossify either, but I'm more towards that tendency than to say let's change something about a layer one.
Yeah. I tend to agree. Yeah, I would definitely argue for the negative on this one. But what would you say to people who are concerned about Bitcoin's transparency? Some of the black pill people are super worried about that, that governments can surveil the chain and, what if Bitcoin is the CBDC, all these type of FUD things? What would you say to them?
I would say they have need to look at other layers. Just look at Lightning. It seems to be some kind of blind spot to these people that think privacy is an issue on Bitcoin when you have Lightning. And we're still kind of early on the second layer stuff. I think it's less than 10 years. I think Lightning was 2017, right?
Yeah, 2017 or the white paper was maybe 2018.
Yeah. So we're still so very early on that. I mean, and the thing is, it's not a point to be making small transactions on the main chain anyway, if you wanna stay private. Like, I'm not sure if it works this way, but if you just send from an on-chain address to a Lightning address and you then send it around a little bit, I mean, you've already made it a shit ton more difficult for them to track what you're doing. I'm not extremely technical on this, but I think that's somewhat true.
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing. If you're self-hosting Lightning, that's one thing. You could use custodial Lightning wallets, which maybe with no KYC may afford certain privacy trade-offs, or semi-custodial things like Lightning service providers like Phoenix. There's Liquid with Aqua, Bolt Swaps. Now we have Arc coming, and then we also have PayJoin too. So PayJoin at a certain threshold of Bitcoin transactions may break the common ownership heuristic that Chainalysis used to surveil the chain. We don't know what that percentage is. I mean, some people have pulled a number out of their ass at 5%, which may or may not be true, but maybe it's 10% or 15%. And then that would offer tremendous privacy benefits. If just a certain amount of people use PayJoin, then pretty good on the main chain. So
Yeah, and then to bring on another part is I can just zap you on Nostr, and it's pretty difficult for them to figure that out. I think who the hell sent something to who?
yeah, just like the privacy element of the attacker and the defender, I see is pretty similar to the property element component, where just like Bitcoin moves the game theoretical shelling point far in favor of the defender in terms of a property rights standpoint, I think it also does the same for privacy. So just the ROI on trying to surveil people has decreased dramatically with Bitcoin, and it's just continuing to decrease with all of these new innovations, just in the same way that theft is being moved towards the defender. So it's just not profitable anymore. So for the
Right.
black pillars out there who are, kind of given up and be like, oh, the death and taxes, and they'll always get their pound of flesh. Maybe you got to look at the game theory a little bit more and look at all the innovations happening in Bitcoin, and maybe you'll be a little bit more optimistic.
Yeah, true. And there's things like coin joins, I think it's called. Then that I'm not sure if I think it depends on each person if they think it's a good idea to do this or not, because depending on how they got their coins, I think you can't just objectively say, yeah, it is a good idea to do so. I think it's going to depend on each person's case differently.
Yeah, it depends on also what jurisdiction you're in, which exchanges you're using. Some exchanges don't like coins coming in from recent coin joins, but you could always add more hops to your transactions. If exchanges start blocking or not accepting incoming transactions from UTXOs that are one hop away from a coin join, then you can do two hops. And then when the exchanges block two hops, you can do three hops, and so on and so on. And then even certain things like PayJoin are a kind of coin join as well, even though it's not specifically designed for privacy. Privacy is a side effect of the transaction efficiency. So, yeah, super, super bullish on that as well.
Yeah, and I'm an open-minded person. I don't know shit about Monero. I don't think I'll ever use it, but who knows what they can come up with something, and then we could use it in Bitcoin. That's the beauty of it.
Right. Yeah. Bitcoin will cannibalize anything that is truly useful.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like some kind of organism that just adopts whatever it needs to survive. All right. Let's move on to the final round. Round four. We have Austrian economics, regulation, and miscellaneous.
On one hand, I feel like a pussy for not taking miscellaneous, but I'll go with Austrian economics again.
Okay. Let me take a look at what was in. Yeah, I like the Austrian economics one here. Okay, number one. Bitcoin prevents hyperinflation by gradually deflating the bond market. Number two, printing money does not, quote, stimulate the economy. Or number three, the total addressable market cap of Bitcoin is greater than half of current total global wealth, approximately $900 trillion.
I'm doubting between again the third one, but the second one as well. Yeah, let's go with the second one.
Okay. I'm waiting for someone to pick number three, but whatever you want to do, number two.
Yeah, I don't even get the first one. I have no idea what the bond market even is. I'm totally clueless with that. So,
So for you and for the listeners, one of my pet passions or whatever you want to call it, this is Saifedean's view that Bitcoin prevents hyperinflation and eats the bond market. He's a good lecturer on this on the Bitcoin Standard podcast. I believe it's Fiat Standard lecture number 43, something like that. I believe it, on YouTube it's called Can Fiat and Bitcoin Coexist? So just for reference, that's a good resource. But
yeah, so yeah, printing does not stimulate economy. I mean, this is the most obvious thing. Of course it doesn't. You know what would stimulate the economy? If governments would just fuck off, if they would not interfere in a goddamn thing, including and especially printing money. Our economy right now, so the mainstream economy, it's all based on this guy, John Keynes, and even this dude said something like, "There is no," I'm gonna paraphrase it, in my own words, "there is no better way of messing with the existing basis of society than to mess with the currency." I mean, it's so blatantly obvious. So literally printing money destabilizes the economy and society. Not to even mention the Cantillon effects, that's meaning that those closest to the source of this new money get all the benefits while we are all stolen from. The thing is, yeah, us Bitcoiners, we know what's we have a good grasp on what the word economy means, but I think if you ask almost anyone outside of Bitcoin worlds or Austrian economics worlds, what the hell an economy even is, I think, yeah, it has to do with money, right? I think that's the most obvious answer, the most used answer you're going to get. But we know a good economy, it's something that increases both the quantity and quality of life for each individual. And how would printing money do any good to do that?
Right. I colloquially, even on if you're to watch, say, CNBC or something, people think the economy means the stock market, but the S&P is the quote unquote economy. So anytime there's some kind of dip, they rant and rave and screech at Jerome Powell, like, please print money because the economy has gone down, something like that. And that, see, from my perspective, that appears to be like, what, 99% of people's perception?
It's hard to blame them because that's the shit they get taught in indoctrination schools, you know.
I mean, unfortunately, I do hear many macro Bitcoiners with podcasts use this phrase, and that's why it's on here. And so maybe the best I could do to steel man is it comes down to the time frame. Maybe they think that in the very, very short term, it quote unquote stimulates demand, whatever the hell these Keynesian PhDs mean by that. I mean, anything to say in that regard? Maybe time horizon.
That's a good point because the normies could consider, yeah, they're printing money because Those greedy corporations are making everything so expensive. So I'm getting a stimulus check so I can afford my foods. Yay. That's the short-term effects indeed that they look at.
Yeah, as much as I don't really care for Milton Friedman, ultimately, he still has some good quotes. And I don't care for the Chicago School, but he said something like printing money is like alcohol, that the good effects come immediately and then the bad effects come later. You get a bit, little bit of a boost. I think we could also go back to Mises, the with the master bricklayer, that if money is printed or interest rates are low, he can borrow a bunch of money and take on a lot more projects because he has the perception that capital is cheap. And so he takes on more projects than he thinks he can. And then eventually, when that structural malinvestment plays out and the tide goes back out, instead of having a bunch of finished houses, fewer finished houses, we have more half-finished houses. And you can apply that to the entire economy, right? And all the structures of production, that it just breeds malinvestment when you manipulate the cost of capital, which is printing money.
And they have the people that spend that money, they have no incentive to spend it wisely because they did not have to do any work to get that money. So it's just not how any of this works.
Right. Yeah, you're distorting price signals. You're distorting the information substrate of the entire production stack. And it just like if you were to communicate with language or computers communicating information, it's literally corrupting the information. It's corrupting the price signals that are trying to communicate value and tell you about how much things cost. So how well would the internet work, or two computers communicating with one another, if in the midst of sending information there was some exogenous force that is playing with the information and distorting it? The computers wouldn't be as efficient. They wouldn't get as much done. So, same thing.
Yeah, I used to, back in my sheep days, I'll call it. Whenever I heard the phrase, "We're all just a number to them," I never understood that until I looked at Austrian economics. Until I noticed Austrian economics pointing out Keynes in economics. Method of operation, you know?
So, would you say we are or aren't a number to them?
To them, of course, we are. To the Keynesians, we are just data that they can that they think we that they think they can predict or they think they can predict what we will do, how we think, and that we will always act rationally. But with most people, that's definitely not the case. So they try to give mathematical formulas to people's behavior, which just is completely, they're completely out of their skull for that.
Right. I mean, even if everybody did act rationally, it still wouldn't be possible because, we could go back to the economic calculation problem. Like, they A, don't have enough computing power, B, don't have enough data, and C, maybe most importantly, they don't have skin in the game. So,
Yeah, skin in the game is we know it's insanely important.
when you said we're a number to them, I was going thinking a totally different route, which is, we're a number that, better pay up. Like, we're just a number in a database that owes this much to them.
Yeah, that as well, of course. I just couldn't explain all of it.
All right. So let's go on to our bonus question, which is maybe not so much of a surprise anymore, but I have my hat here, which says, where does the yield come from? From Alan Farrington, who's also my favorite think boy, who's always welcome on the show. Self-proclaimed think boy lately. So where does the yield come from?
Yeah, so that question to me, it has multiple dimensions because the way where I know it from, it's indeed from Alan, but it's sort of just a joke, right? Like, when I got into Bitcoin, I also noticed, like, yeah, where did that, yeah, in my, we call it rente. I'm not sure what you call it in English, that you get when you leave your money on a savings account. Or is that just called yield as well? Or
Yield or return.
yeah. So yeah, it's the way I think of it is, yeah, if you freeze your money somewhere, in quotations, freeze your money somewhere, it means they can use it and lend it out, and that's what they give you the yield for. But it just means they can invest your money into something, and I'm not entirely sure how safe they are going to do that. So
Okay, so I'm still looking for an answer. Where does the yield come from? Where
out of thin air.
out of thin air? It's a wazzy, it's a woozy, it's fugazi.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think I'm the one to answer this question. Would love to hear your take on it.
I've come up with a lot of interesting answers with me and my real life friends here, and I don't want to give away too many of them. I have some of my personal favorites. Mean, I guess I could pick one, and then if someone listens to this, then I won't count their answer. Where does the yield come from? I mean, to be ultra provocative, maybe bombing children, perhaps. I mean, I could say war or murder, but maybe the most provocative way would just say to be bombing children. Maybe not to end this on too macabre of a note, but that's the century of fiat, in my opinion. Lots
Okay,
of
I think I had the wrong definition of yield, and I thought yield just meant like an interest you get on something that you invest or stake, or I thought that was the definition.
Well, yeah, I mean, if someone were to ask me where does the yield come from on US treasuries, I'd say bombing children.
If you look for, yeah, okay, if you look a little bit further, yeah, okay.
All right. So that concludes the gauntlet. And let me go back here and look at these rounds. We did Austrian economics. We did adopt, oh no, Noster. We did protocol upgrades and Austrian economics and a bonus question. Stacking Beats gets a score of 17.
So I survived the gauntlet.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, amazing.
You made it through. Did a great job. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Hope you had
So if
fun
I can
too.
ask, what do you base the scores on? Is it like vibes or what is it?
Yeah, I vibe coded your score in real time.
Okay, great.
So, with that, if there's anything else you'd like to plug or mention to our listeners, by all means.
I'll just say, if you're into ambient music, I'm a producer. I'm a magician on a wave lake with the artist name is Esuna, Esuna.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, if you haven't checked out Wav Lake yet, highly recommend it. Pretty cool platform, Lightning and Noster integration, I believe, as well.
A huh. Now you're asking.
I know there's
Sort of,
Lightning.
yeah. I think there's room for improvement, but yeah, there is some connectivity to it there.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you, Stacking Beats. I hope you had fun.
Yeah, definitely.
And thank you for doing the gauntlet.
No problem. I think this is a great idea of yours because it's quite original, you know. Other podcasts are very more long stretched, and yeah, this feels like a game show, you know. This is cool.
Great. Thank you so much. All right, take care.
Yeah, you too.